This is As a Matter of Faith, a program presenting an array of religious scholars and leaders discussing significant and current matters of religious interest. As a Matter of Faith is produced in the studios of WUSM Public Radio at the University of Southern Mississippi with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion. Your host for As a Matter of Faith, Dr. Alan Eichelman.
Hello and welcome to As a Matter of Faith. I am your host, Dr. Alan Eichelman, and we have in our studio today Gene and Lynn Phillips. And Gene and Lynn Phillips are members of the Hattiesburg community, and they are also members of the Baha'i community here in Hattiesburg and have been a part of the Baha'i faith for a number of years now. And so what we are going to be talking, matter of fact, they met because of their Baha'i connection a number of years ago. So one of the things we're going to be talking about to them is Baha'i and the nature of Baha'i. I think a lot of you probably are not aware of the Baha'i faith, and yet it is a growing faith, not only here in the United States, but around the world as well. It comes out of the 19th century, out of what was then Persia, now Iran. And with that little bit of an introduction, I'm just going to open it up to Gene, and I'm going to open it up to Lynn and say, welcome to both of you, and could you tell us a little bit about the history of Baha'i? Who would like to start?
I guess it's me.
Okay.
The Baha'i faith was started in the mid-19th century by the man. His title is the Bab, and it isn't B-O-B as in, hi, Bob. It's an Arabic word that means the gate. He's considered that person, that transition between the old and the new. And the Bab, in many ways, has the same position as John the Baptist, which was to prepare people for the coming of Jesus. And the Bab was to prepare people for the coming of Baha'u'llah. 9 years later, Baha'u'llah, God told Baha'u'llah that he was the one that all had been waiting for. He was in prison at that time. He was in the Sea of Chal. He was literally sitting in muck with heavy, heavy chains on his, all over his body, as with many other people. But the word Baha'u'llah is also Arabic, and it means the glory of God. He's considered the fulfillment of the religions, all the religions that have been waiting for the messenger that bring him into this new world. In the mid-19th century in Persia, he came from a royal family. He was raised in the lap of luxury. He was a very, very bright little kid. When he went to school, I don't know if he actually went to school as much as his family got tutors, which was the style at that time. The tutors would leave and exasperation and tell his father, we can't teach him anything. He already knows it. He was very bright. The tutors, I don't think, taught him as much because he was just a very bright child. In his early 20s, he heard about the Bab, who was going around the countryside talking to people, telling people that someone is coming to prepare them. Somebody is coming that Muhammad talked about. The messenger is coming. And Baha'u'llah heard about the talks, and he heard about the teachings, and he became a follower of the Bab. And at that time, the Bab was not popular also with the Shia Muslim. And the Bab was eventually imprisoned and eventually killed by them. Baha'u'llah, as a follower of the Bab, was imprisoned because he was a follower and he wouldn't change. And it was in 18, 1853, he is sitting in the Sea of Chao when God gave him revelation and told him he was the one. Eventually, he got out of the Sea of Chao, and his journey, he didn't tell anybody that God had told, but God had told him. He didn't tell anybody for about 10 more years, but he and himself went on this journey to find out, to discover within him what God wanted him to do and what the message was for this day. In 1863, he did do proclamation and did start telling people that he was the one that they had been waiting for. And it wasn't so much him as his body, his person. It's the message. He is the messenger for this day. And he gave us principles. He explained social truths. He explained spiritual truths, among which is, there's only one God. There's all mankind must get together. We must unify at all different levels, at religious level, at political level, and at the family level. He gave us principles like men and women are equal. Not so much equal as identical, but they both have equal importance. They are both should be educated. They both should have the same potential to reach, the same opportunity to reach their potential. Women need to be educated as opposed to mid-19th century. I think women were considered, were recognized as human beings, but they weren't entitled to food. They could get the crumbs after the men left, but they certainly weren't considered very high or important. He said things that were radical to most of the rest of the world. He said things like science and religion agree with each other. And think of all the early scientists. Think of all. Think of Galileo. The church brought up on charges and was threatened with expulsion if he didn't rescind his teachings that the universe revolved around the sun. We did not revolve. You know, the earth. Not everything revolved around the earth, but we revolved around the sun. And he said, no, science and religion do agree. And if they don't, you still need to find things out because they are not in conflict. He said there should be an auxiliary language, a universal auxiliary language, so that everyone can speak the same language, at least at a secondary level. But in the if you think of the times in the mid-19th century, especially what they were in Persia, I mean, there was a certain amount of electricity and indoor plumbing in the United States. I mean, if you think about technologically where the United States was, Persia was not. And how people were treated. For him to be saying these things that today the Western world takes as, of course, this is correct. This is right. This is the way it should be. Yes. There should be universal education. Yes. It was not. They didn't think, anybody other than the wealthy should be educated in.
It's remarkable that he prefigured globalization in that sense, coming out of a 19th century Persian context. I mean, that is just remarkable when you stop to think about it. Yeah.
And as such, he was not well received by the powers. He was imprisoned, and he was in prison for 40 years, for the rest of his life, basically. But even in prison, he was given certain privileges because of his family and his family station. He wrote letters to all the monarchs of the world, basically saying, you know, accept me now, and we can have peace. There will be peace. All the wars that were going on, all the conflicts that were going on, it will end. Here I am. These are my teachings. Accept these teachings now. Mm-hmm. And most of them did not respond. The only one I think that actually responded was Queen Victoria. And I'm trying to think. The quote is: she said, "If you are who you say you are, then this will be true." And if you think from the mid-19th century to even the early 20th century, most of the monarchies lost their thrones. Most of the monarchies lost their power. Except there still is a a monarchy in Great Britain, but it's a constitutional monarchy. They don't have much power, but at least they're still sitting. The kinds of thing, the principles of the Baha'i faith that he stated for the mid-19th century in Persia were not even more radical than we would think.
And for his trouble, he was persecuted, and the Baha'i community was persecuted to a large extent in the 19th century, right out of the 20th and into the 21st century. Am I correct?
They are. They killed 20,000 followers of the Bab in the mid-19th century. When the when there was a change of regime in 1979 in Iran, hundreds of Baha'is were arrested. And before they're arrested, they do torture them to get them to change their religion, because they think of Baha'is as heretics. They are terribly tortured, and eventually they're killed. And what I find ironic is when families come to collect the bodies of their deceased members that were killed, the government makes them pay for the cost of the bullets that were used to shoot them. It's just seems something out of not even 19th century world, something out of maybe, you know, the 12th century or something. It just seems so far removed and barbaric.
How did Baha'i come to the United States?
There were Americans within Europe who attended various salons in France and in England, and learned about the Baha'i faith. Some of them went to Haifa to meet Baha'u'llah when he was alive, and to meet Abdul Baha, who was his son later. And they came back to the United States and told others about it. Abdul Baha, who was the son of Baha'u'llah, came in 1912 and gave talks around the United States. He stopped in Chicago, where the Baha'i House of Worship is, and gave many talks. He gave talks in New Jersey, gave talks in Colorado, and in California.
Yeah. I've been to the Baha'i House of Worship in Chicago, and it is a magnificent structure. And if anyone ever has a chance to go to Chicago, I'd recommend it in July, not in January, it is a marvelous site right there on the Wilmette-Evanston border. And it is well worth the tour, and the Baha'i community there is welcoming and gracious and anxious to show off this this beautiful, beautiful house of worship. And it is really worth the time, the energy to go to Chicago to see that magnificent structure. We're going to be taking a little break now, and what we're going to be doing when we come back is talking to Lynn and Jean about why they are Baha'i, what it is about Baha'i that attracts them, and maybe also if you'd like to share a little bit about how Baha'i brought you together, would you be interested in doing that a little bit too as well? Okay. With that, let's take a little bit of a break.
You are listening to As a Matter of Faith. Today's guests are Jean and Lynn Phillips. To share your comments and suggestions, please email us at wusm@usm.edu. As a Matter of Faith is brought to you with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion at the University of Southern Mississippi. This is episode number 7 of As a Matter of Faith.
Yes, hello, and welcome back to As a Matter of Faith. This is your host, Dr. Alan Eichelman. We have in the WUSM studios Jean and Lynn Phillips, who are members of the Baha'i community here in Hattiesburg. Previously, we were talking to them about the history of the Baha'i faith, and now we're going to be getting to a little bit more personal note. We're going to be talking to them about why they have been attracted to Baha'i. What is it about Baha'i that attracts you, Jean and Lynn?
Well, it's hard to say. I was just more or less an accidental Baha'i. I was working at Office Depot, and a man came up to me and said, "Have you heard of the Baha'i faith?" Of course, I hadn't. And he gave me his card, invited me to the house, and it went from there. I started reading about it on the internet, and it seemed like something I wanted to participate in.
What one particular attracted you to Baha'i? What ideas?
Equality of mankind, equality of religions, and everybody. It's the organization. It seems to be orderly.
Okay, so it presented a modern face to faith for you.
I was knocked around a few different religions. I've had a Pentecostal upbringing, mm-hmm. and it just didn't work out for me.
Okay, so this this seemed to be more rational in some
more
way,
rational
shape, some way for you that
right.
That was that kind of rationality that you were
right.
attracted to then. Okay, what about you, Lynn?
When I was young, I lived in Michigan, so we didn't really get too many of the Southern evangelical ministers that came through, but Billy Graham always came through, and I think maybe a few others. And then you'd have people driving up and down the wide streets of Detroit with their fingers, one finger out of the window, screaming, "One way Jesus, one way Jesus." And I always kept thinking, if there's only one religion, if there's only one Jesus, why are there all these other religions in the world? And are all those other people wrong? It's hard for me to believe that Gandhi was wrong. It was hard for me to believe that Albert Schweitzer was wrong. It was hard for me to believe that all the other great thinkers of the world were wrong because they weren't Christian. And I had a friend who was Baha'i who took me to a fireside, which is just an informal discussion on the faith, and they'll talk about a principle for about 10 minutes or whatever, and then the discussion opens up and you can ask questions and discuss anything you really want. So it wasn't until I went to one of these firesides that I got my question answered in a way that made sense, was logical, and I guess just basically clicked with me. And the Baha'i answer to why there's all these other religions in the world is they call it progressive revelation, and that makes so much more sense to me than it's just Jesus and nothing before and nothing after, and everybody else is wrong. If you start off with Abraham, and that's not really the beginning, but Abraham introduced the idea of one God. And he went out with his family and promoted this idea. And in his day, it wasn't well received. And then you have the next prophet as Moses, who basically introduced the Ten Commandments. And if you think of the first commandment, do you all know remember the first commandment? The first commandment is, "I am God. There will be no other gods before me." And I looked at that going, it's 1,200 years later, and God still has to promote himself and say, "Hello, it's me, I'm God, nobody else." It's you can see mankind progressing forward from the idea of one God to the idea of 10 rules, 10 very basic rules. And after that, you have Jesus. And basically, Jesus introduced a couple ideas. One is he said, treat others as you would want to be treated. But he also introduced the spiritual nature of man. Because before Jesus, people didn't really talk about their soul. They didn't talk about things in the abstract. They didn't talk about things you couldn't see or feel or touch. He introduced the idea of heaven. We're here to get ourselves to heaven, to be good, to follow God's rules. And this is how to do it. And so when I said, yes, but what about Buddha and Krishna? And what about Muhammad? And they said, oh, no, they're they're prophets. There's no, yes, absolutely, Baha'u'llah recognized them, and they were for different times in different places. And Krishna had to come before Buddha, and Zoroaster came before Jesus. But they're all prophets of God, and they're all moving mankind forward, and that made so much more sense to me.
And in that sense, Baha'u'llah is the next in the line of that progression as the glory of God and the next manifestation of God. But I don't even think Baha'u'llah would have claimed for himself that he was somehow the seal of that, would he? The way, in Islam, There is this declaration that Muhammad is the seal of the prophets. Baha'u'llah just saw himself as part of a continuing and ongoing progression. So it left room for others that followed.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Absolutely. Muhammad's title is the seal of the prophets. He is the end of the line of prophets. And so, I was very argumentative. Well, I guess I still am. But back then, and said, well, wait a minute. So if he's the end of the prophets, who are all these other guys after? You know, who's the Bab? Who's Baha'u'llah? How can they claim to be prophets? They said, no, you don't understand. They are prophets. Jesus was a prophet. Moses was a prophet. Abraham. They are prophets. That is their title. That is their station. Baha'u'llah never claimed to be a prophet, and he isn't. And the Bab is not technically a prophet. They're manifestations. They're manifestations of God. They are a messenger. We'll refer to them as prophets because people don't really, so people can understand how you think of them.
But in Baha'i, isn't Moses and Jesus and Muhammad and Gautama, aren't they all considered, in a sense, manifestations?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, okay.
But we're in a new cycle. I mean, Muhammad is the seal of the prophet for the Adamic cycle that started with Adam.
Uh-huh.
And Baha'is feel we're on a new Baha'i cycle that starts with Baha'u'llah. It starts with technically the Bab and Baha'u'llah.
And in that sense, because it's considered to be a new cycle, isn't it also, in a sense, one of the first, or the four, would you classify it, yes or no, as one of the forerunners of some of the New Age religions because of that? I mean, that's an interesting idea.
I think it's interesting in the fact the New Age religions, what I can think of and know of, are usually using a lot of the old age methods and techniques that were around then. Baha'u'llah promotes science to find cures, but also that a lot of the medicines in the future will be very simple. We just have to find them. The New Age religions are looking for answers, are looking for their spiritual nirvana, and Baha'u'llah is supposed to be that fulfillment of it. I don't know, what New Age, or, I mean...
Well, just in the sense, the only analogy I'm making here is that what the New Age people are saying is that we are living in a new spiritual era. And that would be true whether you were talking about something like Scientology, for instance, or whether you were talking about some of the 19th century things that have led into New Ageism. I even, in a sense, I classify Mormonism and I classify Christian Science along those lines, because they're basically talking about a new era that opens itself up with a new revelation, essentially.
In that sense, yes, we are living in a new age. Technically, right now, we are in that transition, and it's supposed to be the most difficult period of time to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not part of the old. The new world hasn't come. We know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
We can see a peak of it. That would be nice. And we're right in getting there. Mormonism, my understanding is Joseph Smith, I think did get revelation, mm-hmm. but he never claimed really to be an independent prophet.
Well, he did claim prophecy. That is his title, the prophet Joseph Smith.
But there's dependent prophets and independent prophets.
Yeah.
I mean, they do believe in Jesus and...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, and
exactly.
Scientology.
Exactly.
I don't claim to understand Scientology. Number two, last time I read, it was in a book, a science fiction book.
I have to admit I am not well versed in Scientology myself, and I'll probably need to get a Scientologist on the show sometime just to learn more about it. But the idea is that you're taking concepts from metaphysics primarily and applying them to religion. And so it's one of the metaphysical religions, and that's where a lot of the a lot of the New Ageism began with those metaphysical religions that arise again, interestingly enough, in the 19th century. So we'll have to have a Scientologist on here and maybe question him a little bit about, in depth, about the origins of it and all of that. Well, we've just got a couple of minutes left, and one thing I want to share with everyone is how you two met through Baha'i. Could you just share that a little bit? Gene, how'd you meet through Baha'i?
Well, there was a internet mail group for single Baha'is, and we were members of it, and we talked back and forth over the good old instant messenger and and that sort of thing. And I came down here to Mississippi and from Oklahoma.
And she said, I'm not going up to Oklahoma because it's above the snow belt, so you're going to have
right,
to stay here in Mississippi.
There, so I did.
Yeah, okay. Detroit so. Girl didn't want to be anymore where there was snow, and I can understand that being
snow.
A Chicago boy. I didn't want to be anymore where there was snow, and this suits me just fine. So.
Yeah, it's fine for me,
Mississippi,
too.
It's so much nicer. The people are so much nicer. I think Hattiesburg is a really nice place to raise kids.
It's a very friendly place, and I really do enjoy being now a Southerner. And I think as a converted Southerner, I'm even more avid in my defense of the South. I think that happens when you become a convert to anything.
Yes.
And so I surely share that with you. Well, listen, there is so much more that we could talk about in relationship to Baha'i, because it is a fascinating faith. And I hope maybe in the future we could have you on again and we could delve more deeply into Baha'i and some of the latest developments in Baha'i. Would you guys be open to doing that again sometime?
Sure.
Wonderful. Love to do that with you. And in that case, I guess that we've ran out of time once again, and just so goes so quickly. So this is Dr. Alan Eichelman saying to you, until we get together again to speak as a matter of faith, so long.
This has been As a Matter of Faith, produced in the studios of WUSM at the University of Southern Mississippi, with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion. Your host for As a Matter of Faith, Dr. Alan Eichelman. Producer, Jeff Rossier. Please share your comments and suggestions by emailing us at wusm@usm.edu.